This is Ethanolive Internet Radio, www.ethanolive.com.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
You're listening to Ethanolive Internet Radio, www.ethanolive.com.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Well, good evening. It is Sunday night, and that could only mean one thing. It is Simple Flight Radio on EthanoLive.com, broadcasting live from the KPWK Airport. I'm Al Waterloo. Good evening, everyone. And with us tonight, Mark Eppner. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Happy to be here again, as we are every Sunday night at 8 o'clock.
Excellent, excellent. Well, that's good to hear. We also have the other face of Simple Flight, and that is Mr. Travis B., as in Benjamin Ammon. How you doing?
Doing pretty good, guys. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Very good. Well, this is pretty exciting. We're live once again talking all things aviation. And tonight's broadcast is brought to you by Papa Whiskey Kilo. If you don't know where that is, look on your JEP chart or pull out your ForeFlight app and look us up there. Anyway,
I got to tell you, too, that we have wonderful facilities here, and we probably haven't done a great job of thanking the people at Signature Flight Support here at Papa Whiskey Kilo. Between their two studio rooms, we'll call them.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're in the fishbowl tonight with everyone being able to see us broadcast.
Hello.
Hello out there, but a beautiful view of the airport with the blue taxi lights as a background.
What
pretty
a
neat
twinkle.
Place. Yeah, so thank Signature Flight Support for their hospitality and hosting us each Sunday night.
They do a great job. We really appreciate it. Anyway, I'm in the mood for a good chuckle. You know, Sunday nights I get really excited, just because it's a great night full of laughter. So, anyway, tonight, hit it out of the park, Mark.
Oh, my goodness. I always come prepared, and I like to tell a story, but I think, life is funnier than jokes. And just a very short little conversation I had, I was flying this week. I was on an airliner again, and we were taxiing down the tarmac, after we pulled out of the gate over to O'Hare, and we're heading out toward the runway, and all of a sudden the plane abruptly stops.
Uh-oh.
And then it turns around, and we're going back to the gate. And then we get to the gate, nothing.
I hate that.
I sit for an hour. They won't let you get
off. Wait a minute, hold on. Is this the dirty joke you were telling us before the
show? No, this is not that one.
Okay.
That's why reality is much cleaner and generally funnier. But as soon as we get our other stuff taken care of, maybe I'll tell that other one but another time. So we're sitting at the gate what seems like forever. Actually, it was about an hour. And I couldn't take it anymore. I'm kind of hyper. And I finally, we start taxiing again.
Thank goodness I hear
that. Yeah. And, we take off, and the flight attendant came by my seat, and I said, "What was the issue?" And she said, "Well, there was a very unnerving noise that the pilot heard, so we had to go back to the gate, and it took us a while to find a new pilot."
Oh, man. Wow.
That one, ba-doom, boom.
Ba-doom.
Yeah, somewhere out.
That's great. That is just wonderful.
Yeah, so that's what I've discovered. It's like my dad used to say with cars, if you see a light, just pull the light bulb here. If your pilot hears a noise he doesn't want, then get a new pilot.
Absolutely. I think they may have called me a couple times back at the airline for that, and they didn't tell me about the problem. But
they're pretty easy to come by.
Yeah,
absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah, well, you know, I think over the last couple weeks, my little joke-telling flame has been extinguished. I cannot make you laugh, Mark, for the love of, I just cannot do it. I absolutely
can't
do it.
Well, you actually do make me laugh. It's just at the time you aren't expecting it to be.
Oh, man. That's rough.
I'm sorry. That is rough. It's all in good fun.
That is rough. But anyway. Anyway, so I bring in, we got Mr. Travis Ammon here, and he's going to, you know, I've relinquished my joke telling duties to him to try to get you to laugh.
Okay.
So
I'm always up for
a good Boy Scout try, as Travis says.
Well, you're gonna like this one. It's not really a joke though. I'm not a very good joker. This is actually a real live story. A couple weeks ago, Al was flying. I was flying right seat with him, doing some radio work. And this little girl came on the airplane, and she gave him this note. And he was kind of shy. He wouldn't let me see the note. But a little bit later on, he wasn't looking, so I grabbed it, and it said, "Dear Captain, my name is Nicole, and I am 8 years old. This is my first flight, but I am not scared. I like to watch the clouds go by. My mom says the crew is nice. I think your plane is good. Thanks for a very nice flight. Don't up the landing."
Oh, man! Whoa!
The little girl didn't see it coming.
Jeez, I remember reading that note, and I'm just like, jaw dropped. I thought she was real sweet. She had pigtails and all that.
She was sweet.
She was.
And she just wanted a good ride.
Until she dropped the F-bomb on us. And holy cow, what a...
Actually, this true story.
Woo!
True story. When I moved into the area, moved into where I'm at now, 1985.
Yeah,
and still makes me laugh.
That's
was walking down the street toward my house, and my next door neighbor, the kid, you know, whatever how old he is now, but he was just a little tyke. And I said hi, and his name, I guess I don't want to get this out in the radio too far. And he said to me, I think I can say this, he said, "Shut up, you son of a beep." Yeah. And I thought, okay, this is like, the kid wasn't even five, right? Or maybe he's five tops. And so what has he been hearing at home, right?
Yeah.
That's sort of come from somewhere. Felt like with the parrot was there. Anyway, I digress.
That's not good. That's like that. Scary. That's scary.
Take the sound effects away from that man.
Yeah, right. That's nice. That's real nice. But anyway, you know, let's get back to some serious aviation news.
Absolutely.
We have, this last week, you know, remember last week on the show Hurricane Isaac? Do you remember that last week's show? Was brought to us by the letter I as in Isaac.
Absolutely.
And it was just hitting South Florida, but, you know, now it's made its way all the way up to Chicago and kind of fizzling out up here. So it's kind of a dreary weather week. A lot of storm surge,
kind of
high
a downer.
Winds. Yeah, a lot of airports closed, flights canceled, all that. So, I think that we need to shed a little sunshine on next week. So how about let's start off with a weather report. How does that sound?
I think it sounds perfect.
Yeah. Well, this weather report tonight is brought to you by the movie 1/6 Right, if you've ever heard of that.
A great documentary.
Great documentary. Brought a tear to my eye. I've got a couple blog articles on SimpleFlight.net about that. But anyway, let's shed a little sunshine on everybody's day. How about it?
Let's see if we get a busy signal this week like we did last.
I hope not. I wouldn't blame people for calling in.
All right, here we go.
Temperature 32 Celsius. Dew point -06 Celsius. Altimeter 2986.
Ooh.
Remarks.
Wow.
Density altitude 3000.
That's high.
That's
Van
very
Nuys
high.
Automated weather observation 0051 Zulu. Wind 100 at 06. Visibility, 1-0. Sky condition, few, 1-5,000.
That's no big deal.
Yeah.
B2 Celsius. Dew point, -0.6 Celsius. Altimeter, 2986.
Wow. That's a nice day out there.
You know, I've never flown into Van Nuys, have you?
I have not. That is on my
Travis?
Aviation bucket list.
I have not, nope.
All right, well, we have to do that.
Yeah.
You know where I can get a King Air?
Hangar 5.
Yeah, I think so.
Two or three of them.
Yeah, a couple of them. Take your pick. But anyway.
Actually, and not to change the subject too much, but did you notice what's in Hangar 5 today?
Yes, that is a cool-looking
one. We today have in our Hangar 5, which is where our flying club is based, have the very first G2 airplane, right?
Yeah. Gulfstream business jet. It's the first Gulfstream business jet ever made. Serial number one.
Wow.
I've got a I got a picture of the registration plate on the airplane. I'll post that to Twitter. You can look that up just in case if you think that we're lying, which we're not. But you can come up and check it out on Twitter. Just look it up, # SimpleFlight, and you'll see it there. It's pretty cool.
It is, yeah. It looks old, but I remember G1s when I was back in Iowa City in the 70s with the props and all this, and this was the first business jet. Yeah, and it's on its way to a museum, right?
Yeah, it's going down to Charlotte. It's being retired. It's really cool because as you walk in, it looks like my first impression was Elvis's Graceland tour. You walk in, it's a blast from the past. I don't know if anybody's ever taken a Graceland tour, but it's really cool because it's everything 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, left how it was, and that's kind of how this business jet was, with plush, you know, orange-covered couches with buttons, you know, holding the cushions.
Shag carpet on the
yeah, yeah, pretty much, almost. It's kind of like your grandmother's living room, but it was cool. It was really cool, and it's got a cool paint job. It's white with just like this
turquoise,
you know,
or
Thunderbird turquoise or teal.
Teal.
Just a nice stripe down the side. It's really very pretty airplane.
Yeah, no, I agree. I would love to see the inside of it. You're a lucky man.
Absolutely. Well, that's great. But anyway, we have do you have any significance about, you know, Van Nuys?
Actually, yeah. So we started something, what it may have been last week or the week before, this week in aviation history. And so let me try and navigate here.
Well, yeah, so you have a it's really there. Nice. You know, you got last week August 26th in aviation, we talked about how Boeing had received its certification for FAA certification for the 787. And if we rewind the clock a little bit at the Van Nuys Airport, what happened?
In 1965, actually it was August 31st, the first flight of the Super Guppy. Did you ever see the Super Guppy?
Is that big, fat, pregnant-looking thing?
And it used to be called the Pregnant Guppy. Actually, they went through a couple versions. But, yeah, it's a very bulbous nose. As a matter of fact, the first one here, and I have it in front of me, and they used pieces of other airplanes to build this. Travis, have you seen this?
I have not. What's the mission on something like that?
That's cargo. Look at that thing. And the first one had it was a turboprop and used the fuselage of a C-97J turbo stratocruiser, the military version of the Boeing 377. The fuselage was lengthened to 141 feet and ballooned out to a maximum inside diameter of 25 feet. And actually the floor of the cargo was only 8'9" wide, so ballooned from 8 feet to 25 feet. So you should take a look out on the internet, or maybe that's something we can grab later, Al, and post it out to wherever you post these things. But it's a very interesting airplane. I don't know that it looks like a guppy.
Yeah.
But August 31st, 1965, its first flight. So pretty.
So lots of leg room then.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right. Especially if you're standing on your head.
An airplane like that is like a that was a cargo transport. You know, Boeing actually made something like that, you know, the 747, and it was really neat. I used to see that flying around when flying for the airline, we'd fly into Charleston, South Carolina, which is assembly line number 3 or 4 or something like that for Boeing 787 line. And they used it to transport 787 parts between Boeing or Seattle or all over the world, actually, to Charleston, South Carolina, and the Boeing factory in Seattle. So that's pretty cool. You know, that's a new modern day version of that. And I believe Airbus made something like that as well.
Yeah, I got pictures of it right here.
Yeah, actually, it was Airbus.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, well, that's pretty neat. So that was also debuted in 1/6 Right, the documentary, wasn't it?
It was indeed. Yeah.
Yeah, Will Van Nuys history. That's great. Well, if we rewind the clock even a little bit more, 1910. How old was aviation at that point? 1910.
7 years.
7 years. Mm-hmm. 7 years old,
I think.
I know that one we talked about because Aviation Day was something with the Wright brothers, right? That we had last, or was it last week or the previous week?
Yeah.
National Aviation Day. But anyway,
National Aviation
Day. Tell us more, Al.
Well, anyway, so let's 1910. Let's go. Let's turn the clock back. I think aviation was 4 years old, maybe.
Oh, a little off.
A little off, but 1910. The first woman soloed in flight. We had a first woman pilot ever solo an airplane.
And who was that?
Blanche Scott.
Blanche. That's a name you don't hear too much anymore.
Yeah, that's if you watch reruns of the Golden Girls, you might hear that. But other than that, I don't think I'd name my daughter Blanche.
Careful, my mother-in-law was named Blanche.
Oh, jeez. Now you tell me. You know, I'm going to get, I'm going to get a lot of flack for that.
She's going to quit listening to the show now.
Yeah, right. That just backfired on me like that. But that's pretty cool. So, anyway, it's interesting where you think that not a lot of impact has happened on aviation in any particular day, but if you start winding back the clock, you know, a lot of things have happened.
Oh, it must have been amazing. I think about that each and every year, the new things. And we still see it, you know.
Yeah.
Not unlike glass cockpits or other things that we've seen, but the world's constantly changing. But it must have been really neat back in the early days.
Right.
As people were all test pilots, it probably felt like.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it would be kind of curious to see what, you know, when Simple Flight is on its 5,000th episode, you know, looking back and seeing what happened on this day in aviation, you know, today, what's going to make the big, big impact for something like that?
That's 500 years from now, they'll say, remember that guy, Al Waterloo, that started that Simple Flight with Travis?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, right. Well, hopefully.
We'll see.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So tell me, you know, we're always about aviation. People should fly. Would you guys go flying this week?
I sure did. It would not be a good week if we hadn't.
I know. Tell me, where'd you go?
Yeah. So anyway, Travis and I had a great trip in the King Air, the B-200. We went. Where did we go, Travis? We started off on, what was it Wednesday?
Well, we went a lot of places. We went up to Waukesha, just west of Milwaukee. Went down to Elkhart, Indiana, which is close to South Bend. Missed the football game. They had that in Ireland this weekend. Ooh. So we didn't get to go to that. But we went out to the East Coast, out to Doylestown, Pennsylvania.
Yep. And when we arrived there, that was pretty special.
That was pretty special. That's nice to see pilots kind of gather together like that. We got there, and we landed. It was probably 8:30, something like that.
Yeah, 8:30 or so.
They had a pilot association meeting just kind of wrapping up, and they had the barbecues going, and they actually brought us plates of food out to the airplanes. We were tying the airplane down. That was real good. We had a long day. We'd started about 6:30 in the morning and 8:30 at night. We really enjoyed that hamburger meal. And
that was awesome. great. Yeah, that came at the right time, and that hit the spot.
Absolutely. So hats off to the Doylestown Pilot Association.
Yeah, absolutely.
I understand that some of them listen to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So they do listen to the show, and thank you very much for those of you who are out in Doylestown listening. It was pretty that food hit the spot. You guys had a great company while we ate, and it was just absolutely perfect eating an outdoor barbecue picnic at an airport on a airport picnic table. Doesn't get any better than that.
It sounds wonderful.
It was great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I had a trip. I was just see some family. I went to Iowa City. Nice. For our listeners around the country, they may, what, Iowa City? You talk about aviation history. That was actually the first mail stop west of the Mississippi.
And was it really?
Yeah. And it's, as a matter of fact, the history of that airport, the hangar that was there when I worked at that airport in 1970s, was one of the first hangars where the airplane, I think they were DC-3s, flown by United, would taxi into the hangar, let the people out so it was covered, and then the taxi out the other side so that they wouldn't be in the weather.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and when I was there, it was just where we stored airplanes for the flight school that I was at, and pretty cool stuff, but had a great trip to Iowa City in the Cirrus, the SR-22, and actually was, I don't know, this is kind of a downer, but interesting, we flew back yesterday, Saturday, from Iowa City back toward Pewaukee, or I guess I should call it Chicago Executive since that's the official name. And I saw a little red ring on the MFD for Davenport. And
yeah, what does that mean?
That was, so there's a TFR, a temporary flight restriction, and there was a commercial plane going in and asked the controller, he said, yeah, there's an air show here today, and with the Thunderbirds and all. And tonight, as we were prepping for the show, sure enough, I got a call from home that because I said to my wife who was flying with me, I said, hey, let's stop and see the air show. And we decided with the weather that was approaching from the south, maybe we should just hightail it home. But unfortunately, in the air show, there was a fatality with an L-39.
Oh.
Yeah, very, very sad. There were three of them. Let's see, Glenn Smith was the gentleman's name. Left a lucrative job at a Dallas area technology firm for an early retirement, restoring Soviet fighter jets and flying to exhibitions across the country. And he, unfortunately, was the victim. It was away from the airport when they were doing a maneuver, so there was no one on the ground hurt. But certainly our thoughts and prayers with his friends and family, and very unfortunate. We hate to see that. But there's stuff out. I'm looking at it now at the Internet. It looks like a very devastating crash, you know, the big fireball and all that. So, you know, again, you hate to see those things. But
right.
It was one of those things. We were almost there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's unfortunate to hear that. Unfortunately, that's the reality of aviation. And the good thing is that we're going to learn quite a few lessons from that and make ourselves better.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but
okay. So let's move on.
Absolutely.
Let's get on with the show. By the time the intro's over, it's time to close the show.
Yeah, right.
Thanks for tuning in.
Good day.
Let's, what do we got tonight?
Well, Mark, why don't you tell us what we got? You're kind of in charge of this one tonight. This one's really, this topic is, we were thinking about it beforehand,
mm-hmm.
Earlier this week and today, and trying to come up with, this is a pretty serious topic.
Well, you know, I think what we've been doing is, it's been a nice flow, right?
We
start talking about a month ago, the first show in August, about the, what's wrong with aviation.
Right.
And we decided there was nothing wrong with aviation. There are challenges and obstacles as every industry has. And we talked a lot about potential solutions and where the solutions are going to come from, i.e. the pilot community as a whole. And talked a lot about attitudes. And that led to further conversation about how do we get inactive pilots to active, and how do we get new pilots in the industry again to active? So wherever they're coming from, how do we get to active pilots to really re-energize and revitalize the industry? And as part of that, we had a couple young people on our show last week.
Right. Sam and Brian.
Yeah, Brian, who just had his 16th birthday and soloed on his birthday. And Sam, who's 18. And
he's going to start soloing here just a little bit down in Florida, where he goes to school and finish up his license and take the ladies out on dates.
That's what his goal is.
That's awesome.
I like the way he thinks.
Yeah.
So do his dates.
Be an awesome date.
But you know what? They shared the same spark that we do, you know, much later, especially me, much older than they are.
Right.
And so that connection is very important. And how do we take, How do we find that? How do we put it in the incubator and make it grow? You know, we're going to do some things with schools. You and I, we talked about getting the after-school flight clubs going to help in this matter. We talked about the inside the fence people, those that are part of the active pilot community, and those that don't know about us outside the fence that put their nose to the fence like we all did when we were younger to watch and wonder what life is like on that other side. So what I thought would make a great next step is talking about accessibility, not just from a youth perspective, but from a cost perspective, from a resource perspective. It seems like there are pockets with aviation where it works well. Our flying club is one of them, right?
Right.
You know, it's
absolutely
very active. We don't advertise and have more than 700-800% growth from when we started it just a few years ago, because we've hit a lot of the hot buttons. And there's a lot of that that exists around the country, but it just seems that these pockets don't interconnect, and it doesn't seem like there's
exactly
an infrastructure in existence to bring the dream of aviation to the reality that we all see.
Right.
So I think talking about accessibility and availability and bringing all these people together and how we're going to do that would be a great topic to continue the momentum we've built.
Right, absolutely. So the accessibility of aviation to its current users, to users that are getting out, so maybe make it more accessible, you know, so that the current users can stay in longer, you know, to get people in sooner, and you know, connect these regional areas of aviators. So, you know, I think I really like the term when you said this earlier, the word infrastructure. We
right.
need to build an infrastructure that keeps pilot, you know, connects pilots together, right? And or maybe not necessarily connects pilots together, but makes aviation as a whole more accessible to, you know, to the new people getting out and its current users. So, you know, there's a lot of different aspects on that make this kind of a unique challenge. We kind of have to cater to everybody.
Well, and there's no one solution. You know, we talk about you know, some of it, which I think is easily resolved with just us reaching out, doing the things like we're doing now, with even this show, and reaching out, making the connection within and outside the aviation community can help. But there are other cases where it just doesn't exist, this infrastructure that we talked about,
right,
to bring this to fruition. And you know, we were planning to have a guest on tonight, for instance, with the airplanes, with what is that, Open Plane or
Open Airplane?
Open Airplane. Tell
yeah.
us a little bit about what that is.
So Rod of Open Airplane, he's a pretty passionate guy about aviation, and he's kind of developed currently developing a product that helps connect pilots. You know, the concept of this is to, you know, let's say here in Chicago, we have our home airport and we're renting airplanes. And let's say you go out to L.A. on vacation to go see the Hollywood sign. Well, you know, there's a lot of cool things to do out in Hollywood, or, you know, L.A. or the West Coast with airplanes. And one of these things on my bucket list is to go to Catalina Island. So, but I don't want to do that because I have to get checked out in an airplane. I'm already checked out in, let's say, in a 172 here in Chicago. And then I have to go all the way out to Los Angeles and get checked out in another 172. But I already know how to fly that airplane. So, you know, I've got to pay, you know, let's put a number on, $250 to get checked out in this particular airplane. And then go out and fly my $500 flight, so it cost me $750, right? So, so this process of what Open Airplane is trying to do is to try to, okay, get you checked out in one airplane and be able to use that airplane at different schools, different areas all over the country. So when you travel, it's actually kind of a neat concept.
I think that goes back to your infrastructure deal you guys were just talking about too. You know, getting everybody on the same page rather than draining everybody's checking account just to fly in a different location.
Right. Absolutely. So it's kind of a, you know, it's very Eisenhower-esque, right? That he developed the interstate system to put some infrastructure, you know, connecting the dots, right? And you know, that's, I think that's one really great way of making aircraft more accessible to owners and, you know, or pilots in aviation that actively fly.
And I don't have any specific statistics. That's hard to say together, but. You know, I think many of the pilots think regionally, or, you know, we're in our home base, and I'm talking now GA Part 91 pilots, that type of thing, that, okay, we're home, but when we go on the road, not everyone thinks about flying at that point, and it right. may not even be on the forefront of the mind that that's something that could be done.
Right, absolutely.
So this opens up potentially, you know, this opens up that thought process to them.
Right. I know... I think it would be phenomenal to go out and be able to rent an airplane wherever you're going, you know, because that's all part of the aviation experience, is breaking out of your little regional bubble, you know. So let's Travis, let's take flights that you and I would do in our flying club's Dakota, right?
Sure.
So, you know, we're by means. You know, not rich or anything, so we can go out and fly these airplanes maybe for an hour and grab lunch and then an hour back, you know, and that satisfies our flying itch and, you know, is basically the limits of our checkbook, right? So yep. So for us to go out and, you know, so we're kind of constricted financially and, you know, regionally on where we can go, mm-hmm. right, before... Mm-hmm. The money runs out. So it's kind of nice that we can now go out to, you know, different areas of the country where, you know, we might take an airliner out, but we still want to fly, and that avoids that extra hassle and allows us to actually go out and do that flight that we want to do.
Right, you're on a business trip or a flight out in Seattle or something, and you want to go see the sound.
Right.
Go rent a 172 out there, or even your favorite airplane, that 152.
Absolutely.
Buzz around.
Wow, is that a dig?
You know, I had I think I may have mentioned this at a previous show, but I had the pleasure through a company trip, you know, paid for by me, to go out to Hawaii. And when I got there, there was one day we had to ourselves. So I went to Maui Aviators, I think it was called. And rented a 172, asked them to give me a lesson, essentially, when really all I wanted to do was fly. But, of course, I hadn't been checked out. So it was nice to have the instructor, and beautiful. I mean, I flew to three islands in Hawaii in a 172, got to put it in the logbook, and it really wasn't that expensive.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Because it's the same thing that I would have done here, and it was nice to get the instruction. Because I actually, believe it or not, as I'm probably the only person on earth doesn't have a lot of experience in Cessnas, you know, because I've been trained and kind of flown other things.
Interesting.
All my life. Yeah, interesting. Although I did do my spin training in a 150, your favorite airplane.
All right, excellent. A lot of props tonight for the favorite airplane, the 150/2 series of Cessnas. Awesome. See, look at that. It's getting a nice shout out.
Yeah.
But but I think you're right. So that's a nice. I think a good start to laying some foundation for an infrastructure where we can expand our aviation capabilities, our knowledge, and things like that.
It doesn't totally address the cost issue. You mentioned that a few times.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's something that continues to plague, I think, our industry. You know, regardless of whether you have the extra money or you don't, which is in this economy seems to be more of the norm.
Right.
It's how do we get by it? And I was thinking the LSA market was going to kind of hold that promise, but I look at the prices of the LSAs, and they're not that old, so the prices are still six figures
right
out there.
Yeah, that really hasn't turned out the way everybody thought it was going
right,
to.
Right,
I think.
Absolutely.
So, like, what can I buy cheap? Well, you can buy an old, even old twin, but the operating costs are expensive. So it's like, okay, either you're going to get hit with the cost on one end of the coin or the other. It's
right.
tough to get it by. So I don't know if you guys have the absolute solution the world has been waiting for.
Oh, man. I wish
in
I
terms did. Of, you know, the reducing that cost. Actually, there was an article trying to remember what magazine again, but the things that we do to share flights, it's with other people obviously helps.
Right.
And there are ways to do it, but I don't know. It just seems like people keep talking about the costs are
right.
just prohibitive and keeping them away from this wonderful thing called general aviation.
Absolutely. Well, if you have any, for those listeners out there right now, if you have any ways of making aviation more accessible to pilots, new pilots, current pilots, or pilots that are thinking of hanging it up, we'd love to hear from you. Please call us to be live on the show with us at 312-436-0356, or that will bring you live on the show here, and we can hear what you have to say and promote it. And if you're too afraid to calling in, you can check us
pilots
out.
Pilots aren't afraid to call in. What are you talking yeah. about?
Hey, I was scared to death on the radio on my first time on a first solo. I had to go talk to Razorback Approach. It was unbelievable. I was nervous as all get out. So I understand those nerves. If you're a little nervous to call in live on the show, that's fine. But you can go to simpleflight.net, the radio page, see all of our Twitter, Facebook, email. You can send us a question through that. Or if that doesn't work, you can go to thanolive.com, and you'll be able to see a live interactive chat function.
All right, and you're going to hit my pet peeve. People do not know how to spell Ethanolive. So, Al.
So, anyway, it's Ethan Olive, as you like to say.
Yeah.
It's www.ethanolive.com.
Very good. Thank
this
you.
This is Ethanolive Internet Radio. www.ethanolive.com.
There you go.
Yeah. I didn't realize we had to do that at 37 minutes after the hour.
Absolutely. But hey, it looks like we had somebody just, they're pretty passionate enough, and they showed up to help us to figure out how to make aviation more accessible.
Yeah, so, we got a special guest that just walked in the studio.
Yeah, welcome, Kirk. How you doing?
Good, good. Glad you could have me as a guest tonight.
Absolutely.
And I'm a little nervous, too, so you guys fill the blank space, please.
You just never know who's going to show up.
Are you going to do sound effects for him? Or
well,
everybody
you know,
else got some.
Here's if we're looking to fill up, you know, some dead space and just awkward silence.
I can't even hear that. Is that loud enough? Did anyone else hear it?
Hey, they're crickets. They can only be so loud. But anyway, it's kind of neat. We have, talking about accessibility. So we, from an aircraft standpoint, we have renting, right? We have ownership.
Mm-hmm.
So renting will be solved. You know, that is going to be chipped away by open airplane. All right, and we hope to have Rod on here to talk about that at some point. But we also have, you know, aircraft ownership, right? I think everybody in this room's one of, and all of you, all the listeners out there, it's their dream to own an airplane. Who hasn't thought about owning an airplane if you're a pilot?
Yeah, I have certainly been part of that. It's I guess, like they say, the pride of ownership.
Right, absolutely. Travis, have you ever thought about owning an airplane?
I have. I've got lots of things that I'm looking at right now.
Yeah,
it won't happen for a long time, but I like to look.
What's the current thing that you're looking at?
The current thing that I've been looking at, I kind of fell in love here a couple weeks ago doing some flight training with some guys, was a Cessna 170.
Nice.
It's a 172. It's the older straight tail 172. Let's see, 145 horse, I believe. But I did a flight review for a gentleman. He was turning 80 next month.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
And he had
that's
a Cessna
cool.
170, and he flew that thing like it was a Cadillac. He took off. He trimmed it out. He let go of the yoke, and he just kind of sat back in his chair, and it just climbed up all by itself. He got to altitude, pulled the power back, set the trim, and I don't think he touched the yoke for 45 minutes of just messing around out in the practice area there.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me he had fallen asleep.
No. No, he was wide awake, and we kind of messed around a little bit. Came back in, and he let me land it and take off once or twice with it, and it was a real treat to fly. Just very enjoyable. You know, as a tail dragger, where everybody's nervous that they're not using their feet enough, and the CG that's behind you is going to get out in front of you. But that airplane was just absolutely smooth, and that's on my radar right now.
That sounds
a Cessna 170.
How about you, Kirk? Any thoughts of ownership?
Well, you know, I just got back into flying last year, and to me, renting was the way to do that. And even at that, I find that rather expensive, too. So that puts the ownership even further out. But trying to get airplane availability, checking the schedule, and finding out someone's got the plane the day I want it, I can see why having your own plane would be a nice, give you some freedom.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, one thing that I was looking at, and I would love to hear from someone if they know this, and I'm going to pull it up. There was a site here, and I apologize. Let's see. Here we go. It's called letsfly.org, and this is by no means any kind of advertisement for them. I've heard about it, and I want to understand it more. It's some kind of cooperative, and they advertise you can, your initial investment is $2,900, and then your monthly investment is, they show for a pre-owned aircraft, less than $175 a month, all the way to like a new Mooney Acclaim for $1,150 a month, and flying for anywhere less than $28 an hour up to maybe $110 an hour.
Wow.
And I want to understand how this works. You know, it's, their thing is, let's fly members own and fly the best aircraft on the market. And I should probably just call these guys, but if anyone out there has experience with letsfly.org, please either send us a note or call in and enlighten us,
yeah,
because that sounds like a potential option for some people to get into an airplane.
Right, absolutely. If you know anything about that, please call in 312-436-0356, and you'll be live with us on a show with that. And feel free to tweet, Facebook, email us, or do the interactive live chat function on athanolive.com. But I think that would be, that'd be kind of interesting, you know, trying to make aircraft ownership a reality for people. Like you said, Mark, that, you know, you have high ownership costs of a it's cheap to buy a twin engine aircraft, but it costs a ton to fly on an hourly basis. Or, you know, this light sport phenomenon. I remember when it was starting to come out, you know, I think that there was some buzz starting like mid-2000s, 2004, 5, 6 or so. You know, there's a lot of people, I remember, you know, they're older gentlemen, and they were, I was doing a lot of flight instruction out of Danville, Illinois. And there's a lot of older pilots there, and then they kept on saying, you know what, I got my last medical that I'll ever get, because this light sport thing is going to, you know, I can fly, get my flying fix in, own a light sport aircraft, and not have to worry about that. You know, not have to worry about owning a, getting a medical, and it's cheap to operate. Which I think it's very cheap to operate, but, you know, like you said, you know, I was at Oshkosh, and I asked the Cessna salesperson how much the Cessna 162 Skycatcher is. It's pretty expensive. But hey, look, we got a phone call.
Yeah.
All right, let's see who it is and see what we can do. Hello.
Hey, Al.
Hey, who is this?
Hey, this is Joe Nemec.
Hey, how you doing, Joe?
I'm doing well. How are you? Are you still on the line?
Yeah, absolutely.
So are you.
Yeah, you're live on the show. Welcome.
Hey, well, thanks. I was listening to you there, and you're talking about expenses.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, there is one alternative to this, and that is glider flying.
That's right. What glider flying.
Oh,
absolutely.
We do have four different clubs in the Chicagoland area, and you can go ahead and be up for 5 hours if you've got a good day and got some good pilot skills. You can spend $20 and be gone all day.
Oh, that's awesome!
That's cool.
Across country.
That's something to consider. That's a deal and a half.
So yeah, but, I don't know. So tell me and tell us, what does it take then to get involved with the glider? And you go into these flying clubs, or these glider clubs, do they have specific training programs, CFIs, just like everything else that we see on the powered flight?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, they do. There are a number of us out there that have, you know, glider instructor licenses, myself included. And as you well know, there's a few of the guys out there that are airline pilots that like to still fly, and I'm one of them.
Awesome.
And there's a quite a few guys that own their own ships, At the most, they can go from $5,000 up to about $160,000.
Wow!
But you could also just be in a club and just pay for a tow and be gone all day.
That's awesome. That's actually a really great point.
How many hours?
If you were to get your private glider's license, just a basic glider's license, what kind of training would be required for that?
Well, it's kind of the same thing as an airplane. You're going to have to go ahead and go through a written, and then go through a oral and practical with an examiner. And it's just basically, if you're already a power pilot, you only need to go ahead and take a oral and a practical, because the written is not required when you're going from power to non-power.
Yeah.
When I did my add-on, it took me 3 days. One day to go ahead and solo, one day to go ahead and get the proper experience, and one day for the check ride. Of course, that's almost been 15 years ago.
Wow. So how many glider hours do you think you have now, Joe?
Oh, I'd have to go look, but probably about 350, 400. I didn't do a lot of flying when I was in college because there were no glider clubs.
Right.
But then when I came back to Chicago, I've kind of gone back and forth, and we only fly in Chicago half the year, so we don't get a lot of time. But if you go out to the West Coast, go out to Minden, or go out to Hawaii, out to Dillingham Field, or go fly the Appalachian Fly Ridge, it's a good place to go ahead and get a little extra flying time in, and you can satisfy that, and it's a good sense of community as well.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds pretty cool. I remember. 350 hours. That's still a lot of flights. You know, do you want to put a translation onto, you know, that's quite a number of actual flights, because you might not be up. A flight could last 0.2 of an hour, or could last all day, right?
That's correct. Depending on the conditions, especially in Chicago, since it's a primarily a thermal based activity versus wave or wind or convergence. You could be 2 minutes, or you could be 5 hours.
Yeah, so, that's pretty cool. I remember I went to the University of Illinois down in Champaign, and they had a glider club, the Illini Glider Club in Monticello, Illinois, which is a great little grass strip about 15 miles west of Champaign. And there's this guy, his name was Jan. He was J-A-N, Jan. He was a French math professor at U of I. So he wore like really short shorts. You know, if you were to watch...
A lot of guys can't get away with that look.
And it was kind of funny because this guy... So anyway, he was like Lieutenant Dangle on Reno 911. Imagine those shorts, right?
Sure.
So he would show up, and you know, he'd show up. It's like 8 a.m. I think he had a PW5 glider. And he'd be like, okay, I need somebody to tow me. You know, and then he'd go... You know, he'd tow... He get in his glider and he says, "Okay, I'll see everybody later." And he bring a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, a bottle of water. It's 8 a.m. You take off, and he wouldn't land until like 6 p.m.
That's unbelievable.
It is.
Cool.
It was. It was. Yeah. It was pretty amazing. So
we have a few guys like that in Chicago that do that, and they are very good sticks. The one thing you do find in glider guys is that the guys that can stay up for long periods of time are excellent stick and rudder pilots.
That's pretty cool. There's a level of airmanship that's kind of neat to explore, because you really understand weather and because that's really your drive. You know, that's your power source.
Correct. Mother Nature gives us a great source of energy, and on good days, when the blast rate is right, we can be gone for hours and do a cross country just like an airplane. And there is a little bit of a challenge there. It's constant.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a really good point of glider flying. You know, $20 for a tow could get you 5-6 hours of flight time. That's cheap. That's pennies on the dollar.
No, it is
cheap.
Right. And mentioning the stick and rudder skills and all that, it reminds me that just like when we learned to fly a tail dragger, you know, you relearn about the rudder. So all of this, again, increases proficiency in the powered flight, even though now I'm starting to understand just listening to you. I'm thinking through my head, this is something I want to do this year.
Well, sure. Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, there are 4 easily accessible clubs throughout Chicago. There's one, well, actually one is not a club, one's a commercial operation up in Beloit. There's one out near Harmony, Illinois, and then there's one in Hinckley, Illinois.
Nice.
And then one down in Manuka.
Manuka. Cool.
I didn't think I was going to say the word Manuka today. I like that.
Yeah, you did.
Proved you wrong.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's cool. Well, so what's it, are you allowed to say what club you're in?
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Go for
which club are you in? And, you know, we can check it out.
Oh, I'm in this guy's Staring Glass Club. And that's what's on 90 and 20.
90 and 20. Very cool.
Which one is, what town is that?
What town is that again? Is that in the one in Huntley?
That's technically in Harmony, Illinois.
Harmony,
that's
Illinois.
Very close.
Yeah.
Does everybody get along there? Does everybody get along there in Harmony?
I hope so.
Yeah, right. Well, that's pretty cool. That's a great suggestion because making, you know, aviation more accessible, driving the cost down, and you know, developing a higher level of airmanship such as stick and rudder skills, that's pretty cool. You know, what a great way of doing that. That's a great suggestion.
The only caveat is with this is that, you know, you generally do have to join a club, and that the dues are, you know, anywhere between $500 and $800 for the year.
Right.
But other than that, you're generally just paying for the tow.
Right. Well, you could spend that in just one quick little flight in a powered airplane, $500. So that's
sure.
That's nothing.
But, you know, the neat stuff is, you know, going, being able to go to Europe and fly, or, you know, going to Minden, which is by far the, probably the biggest place in the United States to go fly gliders. Is, you know, they'll have guys going up to 49,000 feet and wave.
Okay. Wow. And, holy smokes.
Yeah. Pretty amazing stuff.
Bring your smokes, Bullwinkle.
Yeah. Yeah. BYOO. Bring your own oxygen.
You got it. Bring your own pressure suit.
Seriously. Holy wow. Well, that's a great suggestion, Joe. Thanks for bringing that up.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you guys have a good radio show, and I'll keep on listening.
All right. Hey, thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
All right.
All right.
Well,
thanks.
Take
care. Bye-bye.
Yep.
Bye. Anyway, that was a great suggestion by Joe on, you know, what do you guys think of that? That's pretty cool. Did you ever think of that?
I thought about it, but I don't know. All of a sudden, it kind of hit a little nerve with me now. It's a good thing to do. I have to confess, I've never been in a glider, ever. How about you guys?
I haven't either, you know, and I'm right there with you, too. It's just one of those things you don't really think about. Not to any, you know, hurt anybody's feelings that flies gliders, but I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
How about you, Kirk?
Yeah, now I'm starting to think about, wait a minute, I got to get a 170, I got to get a glider, then maybe I got to get my twin, oh boy.
Yeah.
One more thing to do.
Well, you could always get a twin glider.
But I like the idea of the proficiency thing is a nice point. Yeah. The fellow that I was flying with to get checked out again was a commercial pilot, and when he retired, he took up glider flying, and you know, I think he's just a seat of the pants flyer, and he knows how to do it. And he went off and won the U.S. Nationals and went to Hungary or something.
Oh,
he had 75 hours in gliders at the time.
Wow.
So, you know, but he raves about what that was like. And
I'm definitely just going to take a duel and see what it's like, and see if it, as they say, floats my boat or flies my plane. I don't know, whatever it is.
Well, you know what's interesting? I had like two or three more solo flights before I would qualify for my check ride, my glider check ride. It's actually pretty cool. You have, you know, an engine failure in a powered airplane, you know, seems like the end of the world. But when you start flying gliders, it does, to Kirk's, you know, what Kirk was saying, the proficiency level is a lot higher. Mm-hmm. And you know, what seems like it could be a disaster is just another day around the pattern for a glider. So it's kind of neat.
Although when you said a flight could last 2 minutes, I'm thinking, I don't know that I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to land yet.
Yeah, right. Well, you know. But anyway, that's a great suggestion.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And going back a little bit to just before he called, we talked about LSAs and
right.
You know, I was thinking none of the LSAs. I shouldn't say none. Most of the LSAs just again they seem expensive. I could get an older, more functional, more powerful airplane, but I have to tell you that the Icon A5,
yes,
which now all of a sudden they're having to partner with Cirrus in terms of building that, seems like a plane that now adds that seaplane, if you will, the amphib piece of it, so that you can take it beyond just the ground stuff. Oh, yeah. I'm looking at Travis. He's got the icon hat.
He's got a hat on.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if icon is listening, I want to ride.
Yeah. So, no, to me, that just seems like a plane that, because it hits a special niche, you know, people that have summer homes or lake homes, whatever you would call it.
What makes, so what it, what is the niche that it provides? What is it? What does it look like?
It's a retractable wing, towable airplane that also is both land or water with retract gear. And if you look inside of it, it looks like, to me, a Mustang with the round gauges, analog gauges. And you think, what, analog in this day and age? But it really looks clean. It looks simple. It's a sharp-looking plane. It's the LSA, so you're limited, whatever, 120 miles an hour in the lightweight. But it looks like it's more substantial than that.
Yeah.
And I just think it would be very cool, and it would bring a lot of people into aviation that aren't thinking about it now, because now you're meeting a need.
But Mark, when you talk about the LSA, and we do it through our club, we talk about what kind of aircraft to bring to the club. I started in a 152, then a 172, now I'm flying the Archer, and that's all I'm checked out in. I'm hoping to get checked out in a Dakota, because that's more of a cross-country plane.
Absolutely.
I can take a passenger in it. So when you start talking about LSAs, they sound like fun aircraft and things to fly locally more than that, taking people, you know, 250 miles. So that's sort of what I struggle with as a kind of getting back into this, as to what's the appropriate plane to fly.
Right.
And you bring up an excellent point, and it is a the mission that you want to fly for that flight. And that kind of goes against sometimes airplane ownership as well, because you have a multifaceted mission profile. Today I'm flying to Iowa City to see the kids. I want to fly the lakeshore to see a tour of Chicago, or I want to go to a $100 hamburger close by, maybe three different airplanes.
Right.
Right, which makes the club experience maybe the right thing, because you can get to a lot of different planes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty neat, because, you know, there's this fact that, you know, in one of our meetings, monthly breakfast meetings, we had a sales guy come in, right, for Eclipse Aircraft.
Correct.
And I met with him later on, and he said, you know, there is no perfect airplane. You know, there's an airplane, you know, your dream airplane should be one that does 70% of the flying that you want to do. Because there's, you know, you want to bore a hole in the sky, just go down the lakefront and back. Maybe that's a light sport aircraft. But, Kirk, to what you're saying, you know, you want some utility. You want some beef to, you know, something that can go to decent speed, haul the things you want to haul, you know, such as people, weight, and fuel. You know, there's kind of a tough balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think that the club experience does do a lot of, it definitely makes aviation accessible to people like us. You know, I think that's actually one thing, you know, a club.
And I'm seeing more and more in the articles we're reading that they're promoting flying clubs.
Right.
It was a recent article, and again, I don't know if it was AOPA Pilot, Flying, Plane and Pilot, whichever one, that talked about how important the flying club is to this barrier, if you will, to resolve the barrier of the cost of flight.
Right.
And
issue.
Yeah, the financial issue, and also I think, again, the ability to fly multiple airplanes for different missions.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. So that you know, I think, what's the difference between the, what was the website that they're looking at, ifly.org?
Let's see, it was something, I don't know.
Yeah, but the difference between that, you know, that's actually kind of a glorified...
Let'sfly.org.
Yeah, let'sfly.org. You know, that's kind of a glorified club as well.
Mm-hmm. I think, right, although, or an equity club, if you will, because it sounds like there's ownership there.
Right.
And I promise maybe next week, I'll find out more information. We can talk about it then. I'll make a few calls.
Right, absolutely. So it's kind of interesting having the accessibility of aircraft or an aviation, you know, the people that are getting out, getting in, staying in, are here for a while. You know, there's an aircraft utility standpoint of, hey, you know, I want to run an airplane out in Los Angeles and one here in Chicago, right? So breaking this little regional bubble financially, you know, by using tools like Open Airplane to give you access to these different types of, you know, flyings, right? Also a, you know, kind of a, another financial aspect of the cost of ownership. You know, there's it costs a lot of money to be in this.
Yeah, but, yeah, I guess I could wax poetic, if you will, on the things that people do and what we spend money on. I'll be honest with you. I don't know about you guys. I never want to, let alone do, think about how much a trip cost me.
Right.
I'm sure it would drive me nuts.
Yeah.
I remember one time my brothers asked me, you know, he said, hey, if we went flying, went somewhere for lunch, what would it cost? And you know, I wasn't going to charge him, but I told him his jaw hit the ground. Yeah. And my jaw kind of did too. So from that point, that was several years ago.
Right.
I just don't think about it.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's just like the hourly app. They released recently the hourly operating costs of Air Force One.
Oh, really?
It was like $200,000 an hour. Can, you know, that makes a Dakota look nice and hit the sweet spot.
Well, we could always ask President Obama if he'd like to fly in a Dakota instead, I guess.
True. true.
Is this a campaign show we're talking about?
No, let's stay away from politics. Right. I'm tired of him.
Man, that's for Sam's show. On 55 delegates. But anyway, we just got a text message actually from a listener, Ron. He was saying that an approach to save money is to schedule a full day of flying with three pilots sharing three legs. So that's actually kind of a neat concept. You know, you can go farther. Everybody's kind of pooling everything together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, actually doing the flying you want to do and sharing it with everybody. So I think enhancing the community level of it, that's really fun. And then also, you know, you might have a two-hour flight to take you down to St. Louis. And then the next guy takes a two-hour flight to Indianapolis. And then the next guy takes a two-hour flight back to Chicago. That's a pretty decent trip.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, one of the, and I think an advantage of that, too, is you could get an instrument-rated pilot in the mix.
Right.
Or I'm a VFR pilot, so then I'm not so stuck by the weather.
Right.
So we could still plan it. I can, with some confidence, know we're going to go on the trip.
Right.
And if the weather changes, we're still going to be able to complete the flight.
Exactly.
And you could log some instrument time, too. You could act as your safety pilot.
Right.
So that's going towards your instrument rating.
That's awesome. I mean, you could log it unless you were an IMC, and unless someone was a double I or something.
Right.
Right. Well, and I used to. It's funny. When we started this club, I met another pilot in the club that has since moved out to the West Coast, but we would fly all the time together. It was a two-leg flight, just the two of us, but one goes up, change seats, and fly back.
Right.
And it was saving, and when you're not flying and not paying, you're still learning.
Right.
And we would usually say, okay, right seat person does the radios.
Right.
And it was cool because I felt like I got let's say it was a 2-hour flight, I felt like I got 2 hours for the price of one.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So to Ron's point, you know, our I won't say a caller, our texter, that's an excellent way to learn, to share, to kind of build the momentum all at a discounted price.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. I think that's a great way of sharing aviation in that retrospect.
Yeah, wasn't it just a couple weeks ago I mentioned I was on that? I sat in the back seat of an airplane for some 6 hours, and it was great. I never touched the controls, but I felt like I had flown all day myself, and I learned all day.
So. Yeah. So Kirk, going back to your point of, hey, you know, maybe go with an instrument-rated pilot, that's pretty cool because you can, you know, expose you to an aviation experience that you might not normally be able to do as a VFR pilot, you know, still share that and, learn from it. That's kind of cool.
Right. Well, even, you know, Mark and I have flown on some flights that way, and Mark knows when I come up with some harebrained scheme to schedule a flight 3 weeks out and I can't be sure that the weather's going to be right. And so I say, Mark, would you like to go along? And he enjoys doing that. And it's an element of comfort, you know, knowing that I probably can complete the mission that I'm trying to do.
Right.
And I feel like even if I end up not being able to fly it, I too would like to be in the plane.
Absolutely.
See what's going on. I'm learning something.
Right.
So I want to get the instrument ticket. It's fun flying right seat in that environment too.
Absolutely.
Actually, and I don't want to digress or go off on too much of a tangent, but Kirk, you stopped by tonight, and I think it's because you have one of your harebrained schemes again or something like that?
Well, I do, and if it's all right with you guys, I thought maybe this would be good questions for this kind of a show because, I'm planning a cross-country from Pewaukee to Indianapolis Executive Airport, which is just north of Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting to see how the weather's going to look, but I'm hoping to leave Wednesday morning and come back Thursday morning.
Right.
But my flight plan, and this is what I was asking Mark about, was I had a few specific questions. My plan is to fly east from Pewaukee to the lakeshore. I'm going to go south along the lakeshore. I'm going to have to stay underneath the Class B airspace.
Right.
And then Gary comes up. And about at Gary is when I'm going to turn south. And I'm going to fly either through their airspace or over their airspace.
Sure.
Looking at the chart, it would appear that their Class Delta airspace goes up to 3,100 feet.
Right.
I might not be at 3,100 feet as I'm going along the lakefront. I think I could be, but I might not be. So
right.
I had a couple of questions. One, I haven't yet called a control, maybe Gary Tower, and said, I'd like to transition your airspace. So I just wanted to ask if that's the appropriate thing to do and say, I'm at 2,600 feet.
Yeah.
I'd like to transition the airspace. Is that the way to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll let the CFI.
Let's go to the regulations. So what kind of airspace is Gary?
Delta.
So let's take this down to the regulations, just a regulatory level of what does it take in order to get into Class D airspace, just like Pewaukee. Travis, do you know?
Two-way radio communication.
Yeah. So that's
and not even that one where they say you're cleared into it. They just have to acknowledge you with your aircraft number.
Right. Exactly. So you could say Gary Tower, Archers 3096 Bravo, and you wait for them to respond, and they say, Archer 3096 Bravo, Gary Tower, go ahead. And at that point, you can actually go in and fly over the top of the airport and wherever, unless they request you to stay outside. But, I think Gary, they don't have a whole lot going on there nowadays. But, that's something I do all the time, transition through the airspace. Just call them up and they're happy to let you through.
So it's not an unusual request. It's not like a one-off. You just do it once in a while. I mean, but again, now if I was at 3,200 feet,
right,
technically I wouldn't have to
communicate
with them. Would it still be appropriate to say anything, or what would?
It doesn't hurt to give them the courtesy call. They can see you there. If they don't have a radar, somebody's going to tell them, hey, you got a bogey flying over top of your field at 3,200 feet. Keep an eye on him. But it doesn't hurt to give him a quick courtesy call and say, hey, Gary Tower, we're flying over top of you at 3,200 feet. Not going to be a factor. We're just going to the south.
Okay. So once I've done that, now I've cleared the Gary airspace.
And they'll probably give you a squawk code.
Now that was another question. So let's say I am able to get flight following before I get to Gary.
Sure.
I know sometimes people think that that's something we shouldn't even ask for until we're about 30 miles away from O'Hare because they're so busy.
Right.
But I think lately we've been asking for it and getting it, especially when you're about south of the loop area, going mm-hmm. southbound.
Right.
If I was on flight, doing flight following and stayed at 2,600 feet, then would I need to communicate with the Gary Tower, or would I just be flying? Would somehow they know because I'm doing flight following?
Well, that is I'm going to go back to the regulations on that one, right? You have to have two-way radio communications with the controlling, body of that airspace. So Chicago Approach, who would probably be handling you, will say, hey, maybe turn right, on this head, 180. They'll keep you clear of Gary. Or they might call it, you can ask them to call ahead to Gary Tower and say, hey, is there any way you can ask them if I can transition? And then that way they can give you approval. And sometimes they'll even hand you off to Gary Tower, while you transition. So there's a couple different ways that you can go about that.
It's more complicated, I found, here, because so many of them just take care of it for you. If you're away from Chicago, where they'll communicate with Gary for you and all that, just in Chicago, sometimes I've found that you're ultimately accountable and got to follow the rules. But, yeah, transitioning airspace is very common here, and it's gives you a sense of security when they know that you're there.
Yeah. All right. So, like I said, so now I'm going to clear Gary's airspace, continue south.
Right.
And it looks like my flight plan is going to take me, if not right in it, but just adjacent to two different military operation areas
right.
as I get near to Indianapolis. One of them starts at 600 feet AGL and goes to 6,000 feet. The other one's at 10,000 and above. So I won't have a problem with that one. But that, and I believe I was looking at the chart, it says contact Chicago Approach to find out if it's in use and so on.
Right.
My understanding is that it's different than a restricted airspace. So, sure. I mean, I could fly through there if it's active or non-active.
Correct.
I'm not sure, you know, what I'd want to do and so on. But, again, I'm just thinking, is that if I'm going to get close to it, would it be appropriate to call and say where I am? And
yeah, you know. Absolutely. So, Travis, I'm going to come back to you on this. What do we need to have? Are we allowed to fly through MOAs, military operating areas?
Well, let's go back to that big book of regulations that you just pulled out here on the table. An MOA, you are allowed to fly through it. Remember, it's all VFRs, see and avoid. So same thing in an MOA, it's all see and avoid. Now, however, same thing I just told you about flying over top of a Delta airspace. It does not hurt to give that controlling agency a call and just say, is the MOA active today? And if it is, they might say, yes, it is active. Then, you know, you can use the fancy Avidyne and the Archer and go around that airspace or get with flight following. They can kind of keep an eye on you, but more than likely they'll kind of send you around.
Whoa. Do we have a phone call?
We got a phone call.
Phone call.
Hello. Who's on the line?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Is this Simple Flight?
It is indeed.
It is. How's it going?
Okay. It's going well. I just wanted to call in, and I'm sorry to cut off in the midst of the conversation that you guys were just having, but I just wanted to call in and ask a couple of questions. This is Sam, by the way.
Sam, all right. This is Sam. Is this Sam of 55 Delegates?
Yes, it is.
All right. That's awesome. So Sam he has a show on AthanaLive.com. He runs the radio station and is a pilot. And a member of our flying club.
Seems like everybody is.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's a worldwide organization.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it is. It really is. You guys are doing a great job, and I've been listening and at a family function, and everyone's just been tuning in, and I'm stepping away for just a second, you know, just to kind of ask some basic questions about aviation, because it seems like, you know, my family may have some interest, but there's a lot of... The conversation tonight on the show is a little bit too far advanced for them, I guess.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. So what do we have? What can we answer for you?
Sure, sure. You know, I have my cousin who's interesting into going into aviation. He wants to learn how to fly. He's 17 years old, and he's asking me all the time, how do I pick a place that's reputable that I could go in and trust that, you know, that the money that I'm investing in myself, that the instructor in the school has my best interest at heart. Cause he's like, all right, should I go into a place and hire a freelance instructor, or should I go to an actual school and do this if I want to be a professional pilot? And what's the most, the quickest way to do this that's going to save him money? So he's listening right now. He's a little bit scared to call. So I figure I would call on his behalf and ask you guys those questions.
Yeah, well, that's actually a really great question, and Travis and I, we're both flight instructors, certified flight instructors, and we've got some pretty good input on that. Travis, what would you say? What would be the first criteria that you would look at when going into a flight school?
Hi, Sam. How are you this evening?
Good. How are you, Travis?
Pretty good. You know, the good advice we can give you is you want to shop around. You want to go to different flight schools in the area, and you want to try and discover, you know, somebody that really puts a lot of heart into it. There's a lot of flight schools out there. We're not going to name any names here tonight, but they don't have a lot of passion. They don't put a lot of effort forth, you know, to teach their students the right way, you know, and teach the general public in the right way. You know, the big problem that me and Al have seen is a lot of people, you know, they don't give you the right information. They tell you a number on how much it's going to cost to learn how to fly, and usually that's not the right number at all. It's some god-awful number that kind of scares people away, and which goes back into our conversation tonight, you know, how do we get more people back into aviation?
Right.
So flight school, you want to shop around. You want to see if you get along with people. Instructors, you know, there's a lot of different ways you could do it. You can do it at independent CFIs. You can go to flight schools. But you also want to have him find an instructor that he really truly gets along with. And the big thing that people that they forget is you can fire that flight instructor. If he's not teaching you what you should be able to learn or should be learning, try another guy. Take a break and try somebody different in the flight school.
Yeah. Another thing is that something that's near and dear to me. So is your cousin, does he want to just get his license just because, or does he want to be an airline pilot?
Well, he's not sure. You know, I talk all this great thing about flying, and actually, Al, I'm trying to bring him with us tomorrow for our flight.
All right.
And you know, he's sort of like one foot in, one foot out. He's excited about the entire idea, and he thinks that he's got a passion for it, but he's not sure yet. And
right.
When he looks around, and most of these schools are saying, oh, yeah, let's go ahead and do this discovery flight. And then he's like, what the heck is that? And then what happens after that? What if I, fall in love with it? What do I do next? I don't want to just go in and just, pay you my money and you show me the skyline and I'm walking dead, sort of.
Right. No, that's a great point. So the big thing that I take to heart when, new students come in is you want to find an instructor that's going to take ownership of your cousin's goals. So, it says a lot about a flight instructor if they sit down with your cousin before they go out and fly, kind of get to know them a little bit, and kind of figure out what their goals are in aviation. And then the true test, in my opinion, is that person tailors the discovery flight around the student's goals of for aviation. And the goals may change throughout training and stuff, but that's okay. But another thing is that there's a little element of sales that goes on. I think a good flight instructor will actually try to get you really excited and have that really great feeling of aviation after that flight. So that's kind of my litmus test.
Okay.
That's a pretty big financial commitment. You think now it costs tens of thousands. There's five digit number to get your pilot's license. It's an expensive thing. So it's definitely shop around.
Right, right. No, that makes perfect sense. And another question that he asked me that I could answer, I figured, with you three guys on the show tonight, I might be able to explain this. And he's like, well, once I get my license, will it ever expire? And I told him no. I was like, there's certain requirements that you have to do to stay current and stuff like that. And he couldn't wrap his mind around as to why his license would never expire. He's like, I got my driver's license, and if I don't do certain things that, it will expire, or if I don't renew it, whatever the case may be. He's like, why is it that the FAA would trust you with something, where people's lives are in your hand and it doesn't ever expire? He couldn't wrap his head around that. So maybe you guys could help me, because I couldn't explain why it doesn't expire. That is beyond my knowledge.
Right. Absolutely. Well, we got somebody here to answer that question. That's a great example. That's a great question.
Sam, this is Kirk. I came in late this evening, but I'm someone who got my license back in 1980, and I flew for a couple of years, and then I stopped flying. And it wasn't until last year that I said, I'd like to get back into this. And at that time, I didn't know what I needed to do. I thought maybe I needed to go through the whole process again. But after talking to people, I realized that, once licensed, always licensed, but that didn't mean I was capable of flying. So I needed to go get my medical redone, and then I needed to fly with an instructor to the point where I was capable of safely flying an airplane. And so that took about 20 hours of flying. And I think when I got my private, I flew probably 70 hours before I was done. So it didn't take the same amount of time, but I was actually impressed with the process. And I'm not even sure, maybe these other guys will know, but I'm not even sure if the biennial flight review was in force in 1980. But I mean, clearly now that's what we do to make sure we maintain some kind of proficiency. So that's effectively what I needed to do. I needed to pass that biennial flight review, BFR. And then when they said I was safe, then I had to be checked out by someone at the club who said you can fly our plane safely. And again, I was impressed. I was glad I didn't have to start the whole thing over, and yet I was impressed that I needed to show some proficiency. It gave my own peace of mind to know that I was safe to go up again.
Right. No, that makes perfect sense, and he's listening, so I'm sure that he's taking notes. In fact, I'm looking at him down the line, giving me the thumbs up. So I guess you guys are doing a good job answering his questions. So I'm gonna throw him under the bus here, but one last question that he had was, why is it that pilots have to be checked out, not checked out, but get an endorsement in different type of aircrafts? It's like, you know, I think he's just trying to make a connection between, you know, like driving a car and aviation. I'm like, well, it's completely different. But he's like, okay, well, if I have a driver's license, I could drive my parents' car, whether it's an SUV or not. But what you're telling me, if I have my pilot's license, you know, there is a bigger aircraft or whatever, I can't just hop on that regardless if it's the same type or whatever the case may be. So he, you know, again, I was having a hard time explaining that to him. So maybe you guys could, you know, shed some light as to why that, you know, regardless if you have your license in a single engine, that doesn't mean you can fly all types of single engine aircraft. So maybe you guys could help me with that as well.
And I'll try my best hand at this. It comes down, we learn very quickly in this wonderful industry of ours, the FAA has certain control, but it really comes down to insurance companies. So while the aviation FAA says, yes, you have a license for an airplane, single engine, on land as opposed to sea, and it's not a helicopter, not a glider. So anything up to 12,500 pounds, he's right. But the insurance company bases their rates on people meeting certain criteria, so they would say, you need to be checked out. For this airplane, we want you to have 50 hours, 100 hours, whatever, based on the complexity and their experience of pilots having accidents or making mistakes that cost them money drives a lot of that.
Right. And to add on that, so let's take the car example. And I think, Sam, you were doing a great job of explaining it that way. You know, there's little airplanes, right? Let's call those like any type of car. You know, let's equate the little airplanes, like the one that me and you are going to fly into tomorrow. That's any type of car that you can buy at a car dealership, right? You go to the Ford lot and, you know, they have four-door sedans, economy cars, and, you know, even a pickup truck, right?
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you want to go drive a school bus or a semi-truck. You have to go get additional training for that. So imagine if you're 16 and you get your driver's license and all of a sudden you decide, oh, I want to go drive a semi. Well, you just got your brand new, you know, your driver's license still hot from the DMV, and to go drive a semi, that's going to be pretty intimidating, you know, because you're a lot bigger, there's more rules associated with those airplanes and things like that. So just ask yourself, as a brand new driver, would you feel comfortable driving a semi? Same goes with an airplane. And I think we have something else as well.
But yeah, Sam, I was going to say, think of it as a stick shift or a automatic transmission, because I'm flying an airplane that has a landing gear that's fixed in place. But if I get into an aircraft that has a retractable landing gear, which I think your family member could probably understand, that's another lever on the control panel that I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do with it. And so I need to go up and learn, you know, what to do to make that gear go up and down. So it's like a stick shift or an automatic transmission. I can drive those cars, but I'd need a little bit of practice in either to be proficient.
Right. No, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, I mean, we have dialogue about this all the time, and he's, you know, he's a regular listener. He tunes in, you know, every Sunday, although he's, you know, he's a little scared to call in. I'm like, why would you be scared to call the radio? You know, but that's, you know, that's a fear that he needs to get over. And my challenge to him tonight was, you know, if he doesn't call, he's not going to go flying with us tomorrow. I can't be that mean, because I ended up making the phone call on his behalf anyway. But the last question that he had was, you know, is it worth it? Is it worth it for someone to go into aviation? And he's like, I listen to shows like Simple Flight, and I see that, you know, Al and Mark and his guests and so on at large are coming in and trying to get more people to go into aviation. But he's like, from a career perspective, financially, is it worth it? I'm like, I don't know. That's a question that, you know, I can't answer for you. I'm like, I'll pose a question to these guys, and they could probably try to give you some answers, but I think, you know, it's probably something deeper than that. I think, you know, you have to find out if you're passionate about it and whether or not that will overcome the financial aspect. But so I'm posing a question on his behalf for you guys to do it as a career, and maybe you could shed some light on that.
And this is Mark, and I don't earn my living in aviation, but think I can speak to it because I've kind of always wanted to, and I guess the best way to put it is not in terms of compensation, but in terms of value. You know, I wrote a blog actually about, it was called "How Much Is That Doggy in the Window?" Because people think about the dollars that go out and is it worth it? And I choose to evaluate it based on the smiles that come back. It's just not dollars and cents. It's just kind of, I guess, an analogy. I remember when my kids were growing up, I took a job that gave me a slight cut in pay but guaranteed that I'd be home a lot more. And that was what I valued. I love flying. Every day I fly is a great day. And that's why I choose to, you know, do it. And if I could find something that would pay me to do it, I'd take less money because, you know, as I say, it's not the cost of the smile, but the lack of it, right? I want to do whatever I can to fly. And, you know, like Kirk, I took 25 years off before I got back into it. And the spark was still there 25 years later. And I guess actually I wanted to make a quick comment on that, too, that it's not only the flight review, but also the medical. And so your cousin should feel comfortable that everyone just wants you to be safe, so they're going to make you pass some things. But the license, you have it all that time, but it may not allow you to fly an airplane until you check a couple other boxes.
Yeah.
Right.
I'll add, if making my living, paying my mortgage and, you know, filling up my car's gas tank with flying airplanes, it's actually, I think it's a great way to make a living. You know, it's definitely, there's moments where it's hard, but you know, it's really, it's exactly what I want to do, and I can't see myself doing anything else. And if you work hard and try to explore, always explore new opportunities, you can really make a very fine living for yourself.
And aren't we also, we keep hearing about the pilot shortage that's coming, and we all know about the laws of supply and demand. And as the supply of pilots starts to dry up and the demand increases, I think we'll see a positive effect on compensation levels.
Right. Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. That makes sense. Well, you know, we tune in every Sunday, guys. You guys are doing a great job. The radio station is very interesting. I learn a ton of things all the time. You know, and I fly, but you know, I'm still learning, and it's just, you know, something that I'm just passionate about. Unfortunately, you know, with a whole bunch of stuff have gotten in the way, and I'm trying to fix that now, especially with the club and certain things. So, just keep doing a good job. And I just wanted to call in on behalf of my cousin and stuff. And you know, I look forward to listening to the rest of the show. So, thanks a lot, guys.
Awesome, Sam. Thanks, and tell him to come with tomorrow.
All right, I will.
Cool. Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Excellent. Well, those are some great questions.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Those are all very valid questions in aviation. That's more philosophical, and you know how to choose a good flight instructor, a good career path. And
what were you and I talking just a month ago, where I complained that people are trying to solve the problems, not problems, the challenges in aviation with old thinking. And people that live in the industry, and what I like about Sam's call and hearing from the cousins,
right?
We're not always thinking about how do they think. We're not showing the empathy. And so these are the real questions that have to be answered for someone, at least this one person,
right?
Decide, do I want to go into aviation? Do I want to make the investment? And is the return there for me?
Yeah.
So that's what I love about it. You hear from the customer.
Right.
And those are the things that have to be considered and answered.
Yeah, awesome.
That's true. I got a quick thing on that too. You know, the general public really just doesn't know. When we were out in Colorado Springs here a couple weeks ago, my aunt and uncle came out to see our airplane that we fly out there. We took them out on the GA side, and one of the things that came out of their mouth that kind of shocked me was, we had no idea this was over here. You know, there's Gulf Streams on the ramp and Eclipse jets and everything you can imagine over there. F-18s were out there. And they said, you know, we didn't even know this was over here. We've only been to the airline side. You know, right. that proves it right there, that a lot of people just don't even know.
In one of my trips to Iowa City, I was staying in a hotel, actually, and I called a cab to take me to the airport because it was overnight and I didn't use the crew car. He wanted to take me to Cedar Rapids. I go, no, Iowa City Airport. We have an airport? You're a cab driver. How do you not know that you have an airport?
Right. Absolutely.
That's the same thing with the other pilots that we fly with. They get a cab back over here to executive, and the cabbie tries to take them to O'Hare.
Yeah,
because they say airport.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, when I was at the University of Illinois, I was in their aviation program down there. Very small school, located, you know, 7-8 miles off campus. And people were, you know, what's your major? I'm aviation. They're like, what? We have an aviation, you know. So yeah, there is this educating everybody. That's a pretty big problem.
Well, and I think we've talked about that plenty over the last couple of weeks. The community outreach that we need, and
right.
And the things that have to be done because it's not happening.
Right.
You know, the only people that seem to know about the airport are the ones that live across the street, and all they do is complain about the noise.
Right. Shut it down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Kirk, I want to get back to your question. We have a cross-country scenario that's going to take us through a MOA, a military operating area. And we're kind of getting into the facts. Can we go in there? Can we not go in there? What is, you know, should we fly into it? Should we not fly around? You know, a couple. It's an obstacle on this cross country, and we got to get to the bottom of it. So, we kind of came up with the idea that yeah, we can fly into a military operating area, and you know, it's kind of at our own risk, right? So we can, you know, where would we go and find the hours of operation of military operating areas?
I actually looked on my WingX Pro application.
Nice.
And I could tap on the area, and it gives me that information right there. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah, that's outstanding.
I'm assuming I could find it on a sectional, but at this point I wasn't looking at a sectional. I was looking at one of those apps.
Right.
And so that's where I saw that it was Chicago Approach, I think, was the correct, you know, and there was a frequency for checking on this particular area.
Right, absolutely. To see if it's hot or not, active. So even if it is active, we can actually fly through these things. So when you were planning this, what were you originally thinking?
Well, again, I relied on one of these new electronic applications to kind of draw the line. I had to get east of Palwaukee to the lakefront. Then I had to follow the lakeshore. I couldn't get out over the water very far.
Right.
And it got me down to about Gary, which looked like a good place to now take a beeline to the airport I was going to.
Right.
And it just so happened that line is immediately just west of this military operation area. I mean, it's right on the edge.
Yeah.
Which pleased me because, again, I'm assuming that I will contact someone and tell them where I am, ask if it's active or not, but I don't have to deviate very much to get around it.
Right.
If I'd been going right through it, I think I would be thinking more about what it would mean to have to go around this thing.
Right, absolutely. So that's actually a pretty interesting thing. You know, here's a food for thought that when you're on an IFR flight plan and you're flying towards a military operating area and it's active, Travis, what do? The air traffic control being they.
They send you around the outsides of it.
Right, exactly. So they reroute you around it, you know, because that's, you know, IFR, you know, the air traffic control has a responsibility to keep you clear of traffic. So maybe, you know, if the military area is active, it might be a smart thing to go around it because IFR traffic's being routed around it. And it's, you know, even though we can go through it, you know, maybe that's not necessarily the smartest thing to go through it when it's active.
Well, I seem to remember that active meant flight operations could be going vertically at, you know, 3,000 feet a minute or something. They're not going to look for my little archer.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I can see them that quickly. So
yeah.
I remember when I first, again, back in 1980 when I was flying, with another pilot, and we were down in the Nashville, somewhere Tennessee area, and at that point, I don't know who brought it up, but somebody said, "Guys, you're in a military operations area, and it's hot."
Yeah,
and we were at about 10,000 feet in a 172 or something, and you know, it's hot. You all better turn around and get out of there. And
yeah,
so we did. So here I am, 30 some years later. I'm about to fly near one, and I'm trying to remember that and do the right thing.
Right,
so.
Absolutely.
But again, this shows to me one of the things about maybe even being in a club, you know, I'm not flying as often as you guys are, you know, that fly for a living. You're in the system. You know a lot more than I do, and you do it all the time, and it's second nature. But for me, or a lot of pilots, I'm assuming, who are planning cross countries every 6 to 8 weeks at best.
Right.
You know, getting back into the aircraft, trying to use the Garmins, trying to read the chart, make sure I stay out of certain areas. I like the challenge, and I've been thinking about it for a few days, and now I've got a couple of days before I go. You know, and again, I look at you guys and think, you just hop in the plane and, you know, you could do this. But I need to think it through, and that's why I wanted to come by tonight, because I'd asked Mark. I just said I wanted to check in with you and ask some questions. And so I'm glad I was able to come here tonight and do this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah, we all learn. So it's, and the people listening hopefully learn something as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. You know, it just shows that aviation is, we can learn a lot from each other, you know, in so many different environments. And heck, to learn on a radio show about, you know, answer cross, that's pretty cool.
How do we sign their logbook from here? A little ground instruction, huh?
Yeah, right. Well, we could send out virtual, you know, maybe we could tweet a ground endorsement. Who knows? I think that's really neat. And one thing that really sticks out, you know, from Kirk, from your perspective, is that, you know, I love your level of preparation and thinking about this, you know, and taking the time. You know, that's one of the obstacles that Sam brought up in his phone call of, hey, you know, what does it take to keep your license current, right? So there's a level of, of proficiency kept coming up, right? So you're trying to get better at what you're doing and look at it, come at it all different angles. And that's actually, I think that's a pretty, you know, a really great inspiring characteristic of a pilot in command. You know, mm-hmm. just taking that time and thinking about it and going through it, making sure that, you know, mitigating all the risks that could possibly go into it. So, you know, that's, you know,
I even have times when I've gone through the checklist. I'm in the plane by myself, go through the checklist. Are the controls free and clear? You know, is everything operating? And when I say I'm ready to go, and I start rolling, and I think, I hope I didn't forget something. But I mean, I've gone through that checklist, and so again, you know, there, I have some confidence that I did that right, but it's what makes me use the checklist every time.
Right.
Clearly, when I'm not doing this that frequently, I've got to go through it very methodically and, you know, make sure I'm doing it right.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone has any true confessions out there about those times when, hey, I got to get going, and, I forgot to set the transponder code, or I forgot to,
get their-itis, is that what they call it?
Yeah, go-home-itis, get their-itis.
Oh, or just get the heck out of here, itis, because the storm's approaching, and I'll figure it out once I get in the air.
Yeah. Oh, that's a real pressure of flying. Air medical, I guess that would land under an air medical factor. You know, go home itis, get home itis, or beat the storm itis, or whatever. But, you know, you gotta hear, I call this pilot swag. You know, and kind of hopefully it's becoming a little buzzword around the club, but pilot swag. So, you have to. You can only do things at your own pace that you're comfortable with. So, our pace, you know, Travis and my pace might be a little bit faster than your pace, but the important thing is that you never compromise that pace for anything. So it might take you a while to do a run up, and it might take you a while to go through a checklist, but that's important because it's important to you and the way that you do things. If you start getting, you know, the storm, it's 5 miles away and it's moving fast and you're only, you know, you just started the checklist. You don't want to speed through the checklist because now somebody's knocking at your door and, you know, it's trying to interrupt your pace that you're comfortable at. And, you know, hey, if that pace is compromised and, you know, the storm's over the airport by the time, you know, you're done with the checklist, hey, you know, then it's, wait the storm out. That way you know that you've done everything right. It's just taking a little extra time, and you didn't compromise that for anything.
Right.
For those airline pilots out there that are listening, I think that, you know, we can understand that from, you know, a gate agent standpoint. You know, there's a ton of pressure, economic pressure, you know, job performance pressure to get an airliner out on time. And for an airliner to go out on time, so many different things have to happen. Luggage, passengers, gate agents, you know, weather, air traffic control, you know, crew, you know, all this stuff has to be beautifully coordinated. and the gate agent might have finished their job, and they come to up to the cockpit, and they're just knocking on the door nonstop. Oh, can we go? Can we go? Can we go? You know, and imagine that. You have 100-some people in the back of your airplane, and do you think they want you to compromise that pace just to get out on time? No, they want you to take the extra 30 seconds, even though there's all these different pressures, to make sure everything's exactly right. And you know, you're not compromising anybody's safety. So it's a duty to yourself and your passengers.
Right.
I think it's kind of one of the awesome things about being a pilot in command.
Well, I
have that responsibility.
I thought this was interesting. You know, Mark, when we fly, we'll often go over what we're going to do right before we take off. You know, if something arises, if a problem arises, what are we going to do? Stay on the runway? If we're off the runway, are we going to look within 30 degrees of the runway? Or when can we make a safe turn and so on? And when I flew with that retired airline pilot who's an instructor up in northern Wisconsin, we were flying his 172, and we were on the runway, and he said, what are we going to do if something happens? And it was the same thing that you go through. So, I mean, it doesn't matter. You know, these are things that mm-hmm. everyone does. And I just thought that was neat that I was hearing it 300 miles away from someone who was, you know, who I'm not normally flying with, but who thought that was a good thing to go through.
Yeah, too. Absolutely.
That's a great idea, too. And a lot of times with students, you know, you'll tell them, all right, well, what are we going to do after we take off? They don't even have any idea what heading they're going to turn to, you know. So you've got to teach them and say, okay, well, if we're going on a cross country, what heading do we want to fly? You know, or what heading is ATC going to tell us? You know, just give them that idea and push them to make that next decision so they're not just hanging out at 2,000 feet trying to figure out which way I need to go to get to that cross country stage.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Oh, that's a very good point. And I think that the, you know, we all have these different opportunities and paces and things like that. And you know, I think, you know, we should all push each other. You know, that's kind of, you know, push each other.
P-U-S-H.
Where's the cuss sound for that?
Yeah.
Boo. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, try to make ourselves better, you know, and I think that's kind of a neat aspect of the community level of aviation.
And for the most part, I think we see that, whether it's a pilot that flies every 6 to 8 weeks or every 6 to 8 minutes. It seems like the pilots that are really into it take a pride in doing it right, and you know, I feel very good about the pilot community for many aspects, but this one in particular.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I remember, you know, we're talking about run-ups, and
yeah.
I always feel a little bit, you know, there's the pressure again.
Yeah.
I'm pulled over to do a run-up, and there's some jet behind me waiting to take off. And
yeah.
So I try to get over enough that if they need to go by me. But I remember flying with this friend who has the Pilatus and the turboprop, and as we were taxiing towards the departure end of the runway, he's telling the tower, we'll be ready to go when I get there.
Yeah,
I thought, well, what are you, shortcutting the whole process? No, I think the process is different,
yeah.
Which was interesting. But I kind of like that. I mean, there was something neat about, hey, we'll be ready to go when we get to the end of the runway. And I'm thinking I'd have to stop and spend 5 minutes here getting things
right.
buttoned up. So.
Absolutely. Well, if you ever find yourself in that scenario, you know, there is a, with one of my students, Al, another club member, we went to Memphis. And we had to do a run-up at the end of the runway, and there were a couple, you know, Delta Connection flights, CRJs, waiting for us to finish our run-up, you know. And, yeah, there's a lot of pressure, but at that point, you know, so if that ever happens to you where you have to do a run-up at the end of the runway, hey, nobody's ever going to compromise or get mad at you for trying to be extra safe. So don't ever, you know, somebody might get annoyed or say something on the radio, but... Hey, you know, the defense that anybody has is that, you know, first of all, people shouldn't do that on the radio because that's pretty, you know, in my opinion, it's very immature, right? But, you know, you're taking the time out to be safe, and that's really, at the end of the day, what matters. You
right.
know, 5 minutes well, isn't going to really
and
kill
you
anybody.
Can, I think, obviously mitigate some of the issues, like when I'm at a Bravo or some other, even some of the more busy Charlies, I tell them up front, I'm going to need time to do a run-up.
Yeah.
So they can send the guy another taxi
if
they need to get him on.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Or send me across to the other side so I can do my run-up. So just, it's once again, communication, informing people.
Yeah.
You know, even Milwaukee, I remember, are you going to be ready at the end? No, we're not going to be ready
right.
at the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a, you know, that was an interesting lesson that I was taught I was flying at the airlines. I was at Dallas, and I was pretty green as a co-pilot, and I had this pilot that, you know, basically, you know, his seat, there's a little screw in his seat that came loose, so it would just like fold it all the way back. And we're at the end of the runway, and you know, the tower, you know, imagine a place at like DFW, you know, it has a lot of traffic, you know, international hub, you know, corporate headquarters for American Airlines, right? You know, there's a huge airport. Well, there, as we get to the end of the runway, we need to fix this problem with this guy's seat, right? The captain, the pilot command seat is all messed up. So we sat there at the end of the runway. Tower kept saying, "Are you ready to go? Are you ready to go? Are you ready to go?" And I'm on the radio. I said, "No, you know, we're not. We'll call you when we are ready." And he was trying to pressure us into a situation.
You were holding short?
Yeah, we're holding short at the end of the runway. You know, there's plenty of room for other airplanes to go, but this guy just kept pecking at us. And the captain was actually up trying to find this screw in the cockpit that had fallen out. And, you know, he got on the radio and said, you know, "Sir, we will call you when we're ready. You know, please don't, you know, we're trying to fix something." You know, and sometimes it takes a stern, you know, they're not a control tower or somebody else is, doesn't realize that they're being, you know, they keep poking at you, and it's really bothering you. So sometimes you just have to let them know.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think that's kind of cool. You know, we're all trying to make each other better.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm looking at the clock, and we decided we were going to take a break at 9.
Yeah.
I think you meant you must have been talking like L.A. time.
In the 9 o'clock hour. Yeah, right. Well, 9 o'clock Zulu time.
There you go, yeah, something right. Like that. And do a little hangar talk. So we've got about a little less than 15 minutes to go. I don't know if we want to get I do know that if anyone out there would like to call in and do a little hangar flying with us over the next 10 or 15 minutes, that would be great. I don't know, Dale, do you have something specific that you thought would be a good place to kick this off?
Yeah, absolutely. I love airports. You know, you saw before the show this afternoon, I was up at our clubhouse, right, and I was on playing Flight Simulator with the big yoke and throttle. You know, call me a nerd, whatever. But
you're a nerd.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, I just wanted to do that, you know.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Anyway, I was flying one of my favorite approaches into my favorite airport, and that was in the River Visual into Washington, DCA. That was just my favorite airport. So I'm going to throw it out there. What are your guys' favorite airports?
Kirk?
Travis?
Okay.
Kirk?
I don't have that many, but I flew to Dowagiac, Michigan a month ago.
Oh, cool.
With someone else from the club. And as we're flying, I said, you know, this is a right pattern we have to fly. And he said, right pattern? How'd you know that? And then see, again, that was...
Whoa.
Oh, okay. We got a call coming.
We got a call. Let me grab the call. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Who's calling?
Hello?
Hello? This is one of those things where you probably have to turn down the radio because there's a little bit of a delay.
Turn your radio station off.
Turn your internet off, yeah, or turn it down.
I don't know what I'm doing here.
It's okay. Either do we, yeah. So you're in good company.
Hey, we're all pilots.
If you can turn down the volume of your computer.
Is that what I need to do?
Yeah.
Can I still hear you guys?
You should be able to. Through the phone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you could walk away, pick up your phone, and you could walk away into another room, and you'd be able to hear fine.
Oh, all right. Gosh, when I started hearing the River Visual in Dowagiac, Michigan, I just turned you guys on for the first time about 10 minutes ago and realized, oh, my God, I'm probably missing your show, but good chance for me to try to catch the end of it, I guess.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Dowagiac brings back fond memories.
Tell us more.
I grew up in Kalamazoo, Portage, Michigan, and I took my first aviation course of any kind as a junior in high school. It was aviation. It was called aviation class, and it was taught by the shop teacher, who was also a local flight instructor at Cal Aero, the Cessna Pilot Center at Kalamazoo Airport.
Nice.
And during the course of that class, I became friends with a guy named John Kober, whose dad owned a Cessna 206 at the airport. And I was kind of hanging out with him. I still had never flown in my life. But here I am taking ground school, as a high school course, and getting buddies with a guy whose dad owns a 206. And so we go to Portage Northern versus Dwajak High School football game down in Dwajak, and I'm really envious because John Kober's taking his dad's 206 down to Dwajak Airport on Friday night Dwajak Union. Is that the name of the airport, Dwajak Union? Or is that the high school? I can't remember now.
All I know is it's the Dwajak Chieftains. It's the high school. I'm not sure about the airport.
Yeah. So that was my one time I saw Dwajak Airport. It was at night during a high school football game. And I drive by the airport on the way to the game, and sure enough, there's John Kober taxiing around in his 206. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I wish I could have gotten a ride with him at that point. And that whetted my appetite. So a little bit later in the year, in February, I finally got my mom and dad to let me take my first flying lessons at Kalamazoo Airport.
How funny is that? Just the term Dwajak kind of brought all this to the forefront.
I know. Who mentioned that? Was that Sal?
No, it's Kirk. Actually, my wife's family vacations over there in that Sister Lakes area, so that was the closest airport to fly to.
Really?
And it was sort of like a ghost town. I mean, I felt like if I told someone I landed there, they were going to say, you know, no, that airport's been closed for 25 years.
I don't know if it's closed or not anymore.
It's just got that one strip, just a 279, and that's it. And FBO was locked up and dusty, so I don't know what goes on there, but we were able to land and take off.
Wow.
So what's your favorite airport?
Oh, boy, favorite airport. My God. I don't know. I guess, it depends on when you ask me, but right now, I got to say it's Willard after today with Al. My God, that was great.
That was an awesome flight. That was every day is a great day to fly to Champaign, and all those Illini guys out there listening. Yeah, that was an awesome flight. We got some. What did we do? We shot a fun approach unsuspectingly down to what approach did we shoot?
It was the 1-4 left RNAV. And, LPN with the WAS.
Yeah.
First time I had done that approach at that runway at that airport. Last time I'd done it was the back course before they've now turned off the back course there, and now they've got the, Al taught me it's not a precision approach, but it's a precision minimum.
Right. Absolutely. So we're kind of in this weird transition period with GPS approaches, and right now, that you can actually fly them like an ILS, but they're non-precision approaches. But very soon, some of them will become qualify as that. But yeah, that was a good flight. We flew. What did we fly down there? Piper, Dakota.
Right. Yeah. And gosh, I've been there so many times in the last few years. It's just fond memories. Flight Star is such a great FBO there.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
They're real friendly down there. The power and the approach, they're always real friendly. Even when you make a mistake, like reading back the clearance, I was cleared to Chicago Executive, but I repeated back cleared to Champaign, via, Pontiac, Victor 227, Plano, and everything else. And I said, readback was all correct, except your destination was Chicago Executive, not Champaign.
Yeah. Kirk, you've got some good Champaign flight hours, don't you?
Yeah, and now I've got a daughter that's down there, so I'm hoping to make some flights down to Champaign in the future.
Yeah, and I do the Champaign, but it has nothing to do with the airport. But anyway, I digress.
Oh,
Well, we got to do a champagne. We got to do a champagne run a few times down there.
Let's do a football game thing.
Yeah, on champagne. Yeah, because I got. I'm teaching the class down there, so
absolutely.
In the law school for a few times, we'll have to try to do that.
Yeah. Well, what a great. We got a lot of good reasons to get back down to Champaign. And that's so it should be said, so shall be done. Is that what they say, or
so let it be written, so let it be done?
Yeah, well, I guess we got somebody needs to tweet that so it's written.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
Any other great favorite airports?
Actually, I want to pipe in. I have to admit, you guys hear me talk about Iowa City and which is the better U of I should say. But anyway, I digress. But I've told some of you this. I had a wonderful approach into Kansas City downtown, and to me, you know, I've flown in Hawaii now, I've flown in Montana, I've flown through the Midwest, but flying to Kansas City downtown airport, VFR visual, where it took me over downtown and circled. I had to come between two radio towers that were huge. I mean, I thought something was wrong, you know, because it was the only runway that took me like through an obstacle course, it felt like. And it was just, it was phenomenal. I have to say, I never got the opportunity to land at Meg's, which may have trumped it ultimately. But the Kansas City downtown was not my favorite airport, but certainly my favorite approach today. To date.
Can I ask you, I was just in Kansas City about 2 months ago on a beautiful hot day when it was not busy there, and we were at the Overlook. We drove to the Overlook on the other side of the river from the airport, but with this great view looking, you know, right down onto the airport, kind of, I think you're looking kind of a northerly direction from the Overlook.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think you're looking at runway 1 there.
Where are these radio towers? I was looking all around. And I was telling everybody, yeah, Mark told me he flew in here and had to dodge some radio towers, but we couldn't figure out where they were.
Well, the one is, I think they're Channel 4, and I'll send you a picture, but it's not just a thin little radio tower. It looks like a pyramid, and it's bright, bright red. That was on my right, and then there was like 5 towers. I'll have to show you. But yeah.
Coming in on runway 1, did you say?
Correct.
Okay.
I came from the north, and then I had a circle. You know, I did a right downwind, right base, and went through some. Like I say, you could see the towers. Obviously, they weren't like 2 inches from my wingtips. It wasn't like a Red Bull race or anything like that. But even my passenger, who was not a pilot, kept saying, aren't we a little close to those towers? So, then the one especially was this TV tower. I don't know exactly I think it's Channel 4 or something like that. But I'll get you a picture of it, and maybe we'll pull it up on 4Flight.
Yeah.
By the way, I've got to confirm the river visual. I've seen that on United Airlines coming in, listening to Channel 9, and wow, man, that is one beautiful way to come into Washington, D.C.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really a lot of fun. Coming out up the river is just as fun as well. But, yeah, you're right. I'm glad. That's awesome. So
you've actually done it as a pilot, right, Al?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah.
It's,
wow.
Based out of there for about 2 years. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. A lot. Never got boring. Yeah, but
yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, well, thanks. Well, thanks, Carl, for calling in. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm glad I remember too.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. We'll set up a day down to go down to Champaign, catch some football, and have a Jimmy John's sandwich.
Yeah,
or Papadels.
Yeah, Papadels. Yeah, I love it.
And is that Kirk? Was that you who was also interested in Champaign as well?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
There you go.
Right. Well, we'll get something going down to Champaign, but the clock is ticking here. We got to start wrapping things up. But thanks, Carl, for calling. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And all right,
happy Labor Day.
Good night.
Yeah, thanks.
Good to talk to you.
Good night. Anyway, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's nice to get some callers going, and this is true hangar flying.
Absolutely. Right?
And then we get to just talk whatever comes to mind and connect. Again, there's that outreach, it's communication, connect with the listeners and the rest of the pilot community.
Absolutely. Which is kind of cool. You know, that's the fun thing about hangar talk is it can go on forever. Right?
You and I say that's fun. It's my wife, for instance. I say, hey, I just got to run in, stay in the car. I'll be right back. I'm going to run in the hangar and pick up my phone that I left.
Yeah.
And she doesn't believe me, and I know why. Because it's usually an hour later, oh, I just bumped into so-and-so or so-and-so wanted to ask me a question.
Right, right.
So,
I tried to get a hold of Mark this afternoon, and I said, any chance you're going to be near the airport? He said, I'm in a bar near the airport. I will be at the airport. Then I'm going to do the radio show. Then he's been gone for 8 hours, I think.
That's the champagne he was talking about.
Yeah, right.
All I had was a cup of chili.
We could open up a whole other can of worms with pilot and bar jokes.
I don't drink. Yeah, really. Really. I'll have to put a few of those on my next one.
Well, anyway, but there's a unfortunate thing is usually time is always the constrictor on hangar talk.
Yeah, as it is now, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But we have a lot of great people behind the scenes working on our show. I don't know if you know it, but tonight's legal services were provided by Charlie Waite at Lineup and Waite LLP. When you need help with aircraft titles or liability issues, Lineup and Waite. Anyway, travel arrangements were brought to you tonight by Heathrow. Music is so graciously been provided by Carbeat. Housekeeping, you know, we're all messy individuals. Pilots are, you should see some of the hotel rooms that I leave behind on overnights. But housekeeping tonight has been brought to you by Maggie Nito. Tonight's producer is Otto P. Lott. Catering has been provided by Otto's sister, Edelot, assisted by Imelda D. Fudge. Maintenance provided by Otto's brother. Who's that? Oh, it's Costalot. Financing for Simplify has been provided by Betty Makes It. And our chief scheduler tonight is Clearance Good.
Anyway, you always say, why you don't make me laugh?
I can hear it chuckle.
I love to laugh with you. I got him mad. I'm laughing at you.
Yes, I got
you.
You
had
laugh.
Me for a minute there.
Anyway, but it's been a great show, and I think we, you know, well, in between now and next week's show, there's going to be a lot of hangar flying, but we kind of brought up some great ideas on how to make aviation more accessible to
We have to, I think, delve into it. We just kind of hit the very surface layer of it, but slowly but surely we'll get through all the things that are important to this industry and to all of us, and just like Sam's cousin, you know, make sure that we have a good inflow of passionate, dedicated pilots.
Right, right. Well, anyway, we wrap up a great show. We thank Kirk and Travis for stopping in tonight.
Absolutely.
It's been a lot of fun having you.
Thanks for having me in.
Yeah, absolutely. And until next week, happy landings.
Blue skies.
And tailwinds. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
You're listening to Ethanolive Internet Radio, www.ethanolive.com.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.